This is Elevations, bringing new perspective to science, technology, education, and the arts. I'm your host, Amy Reynolds. Today, we're talking with Jason Lorenzon, lead faculty of the Unmanned Aerial Vehicle Program in the College of Aeronautics and Engineering.
I honestly think in about 10 years, it's going to look like the Jetsons. So you can order one up like Uber for the air, and it'll take you within 25 kilometers wherever you want to go.
Jason was one of the first pilot lawyers to receive an FAA drone certificate in Ohio, allowing him to fly drones commercially. Jason, thank you for joining us.
No problem. Thanks for having me here.
What started you down the path of piloting drones?
Well, it was an interesting area because it's certainly a development. Of course, having the love of flying is always the first thing. Having things flying in the air was certainly an exciting time because these are everywhere now. You go into a Costco, you go into a Sam's Club, certainly with the FAA, with the drone acceleration program, certainly a lot of opportunities to help share that knowledge with our students and to help share that with our communities and what to do, what not to do, more importantly. That was certainly one of the ways I became involved. And of course, anything that flies, I'm usually there.
How are drones different than flying a normal aircraft or a plane?
Drones, really a military application. But when I was a teenager, I was interested in modeling. So you have the confluence or the connection of those two coming together, I'd say around 2010, where military technology spilled over into consumer technology and where drones really became important in our society around 2010, 2012, where everybody could buy one. And that's because of the whole technological curve. But really, modeling is the way I got involved with it. And the problem with modeling is that you're sitting on the ground watching the plane fly by. So it's a little bit of a different perspective. And yeah, I've always had a problem doing that. But now with automation, with everything with drones, a lot easier to fly. Now, my son, who's 14 years old, bought him a simulator a few Christmases ago. He can handle it. He can handle being on the plane and he can handle being on the ground. I mean, it's taken me some time, but that's really one difference is your perspective. Flying an actual airplane, I'm on the plane. I'm in the direction the plane is going. Flying a drone or flying a model, you're looking up at it from the ground.
Do you see it being common for people to get certified for both?
Absolutely, yes. And actually, the FAA has made it very easy for a person who is a pilot to become a licensed or certificated SUAV or drone pilot.
Yeah. And so if you were someone who didn't fly and you wanted to learn to be certified, is it a challenging process if you have no experience?
I wouldn't say it's a challenging process in terms of the knowledge that you have to have. There's a knowledge exam that you have to take with the FAA, which is about 60 questions, which is equivalent really to the private pilot certificate. There's a whole bunch of questions on airspace, on safety management systems, on different UAV, what we call unmanned aerial vehicle systems, which a student has to go through. And then they have to write the test, have to score better than 70%, go through a TSA vetting, and then go to the FAA and ask to have their certificate once those two elements are done. But there's no practical training, which is kind of interesting. There's, of course, practical training behind anything, private pilot and op. But with drone technology, there isn't right now.
Why do you think that is?
What I've been told by the FAA, unofficially, is because there's too many of them out there. And what is a UAV? For the midterm on both my classes I teach here at Kent, which is really interesting, I gave that definition. What's the difference between a model aircraft and a UAV? And there's very subtle differences. But there are so many differences in terms of platforms. They can be a high-winged, similar to a high-winged aircraft. They can be a rotocopter, what we call a quadcopter. And that is one of the reasons that FAA can't come up with a standardized test at this point in time.
What do you see as the most useful purposes, or what is the most common reason people maybe become trained to use a UAV or a drone? And then I guess I have to quit calling it a drone, right? Because that has a military context. But for an unmanned aerial vehicle, right, UAV, what are the most common purposes now? And what do you see, or where do you see this going?
A lot of them right now are photography and videography. But the list is endless, from farming agricultural uses for agronomists to come up with different usage of farming, where's more fertilizer needed in a farmer's field, using different photographic sensors and technology. Amazon, we see now coming up, probably going to lead the charge for package deliveries. Most packages that people order are under 5 pounds. It's going to be a matter of time a short amount of time probably when these things are going to be delivering pizzas. Whatever you order on Amazon will come to you pretty quickly using a drone. But right now, a lot of photography, a lot of videography. We see some local news stations replacing their helicopters with drone technology. So a lot cheaper for them, a lot less expensive, more readily available. But the list is really endless. You know, we've worked with different law enforcement agencies. Bureau of Criminal Investigations out in Ridgefield, they're using them for surveillance, crime scene investigation. Firefighters using them to determine where a fire is ravaging a house and where to start attacking the fire more efficiently. So, I mean, it's how creative you can become right now at this point.
Given this range of possibilities, are there legal challenges? I know you have a... With your law background, you're probably seeing this from multiple perspectives.
Every time I speak on this issue, that's where I'm getting the most amount of questions. If there's a panel, they really don't want to talk to the experts, the technological experts, which I'm not. They want to talk about operations and how can we do this? How can we fly safely? How can we fly legally? And those are definitely the biggest challenges. And how do you fly legally? Well, laws are under 400 feet. Within line of sight, but there's certain airspace requirements. And that's why what we call the Part 107 exam really hones in a lot where you can and can't fly. And you have to be able to read an aeronautical map with some efficiency. But we do call this in the legal community, we do call it the wild, wild west of law right now because it's really, really open-ended.
If a student is learning this technology, either from the legal standpoint or the aeronautic or technological standpoint, what kind of different career paths? I guess the law is the law, right? But
right.
But what other uses would this have for a student?
Well, we have a couple of my students have their own company set up, and they're working for different realtors, taking different pictures of houses. Some of them are doing aeronautical work. There's no requirement right now, but training some of our students in how to practically fly these different platforms. And again, the bigger careers right now are the ones that are technologically based, the computer science, the technicians, the engineers, the physicists, coming up with the actual platforms and the ideas. But for the students right now who, you know, a lot of my flight tech majors, a lot of my pilot majors, that's really going to be the next leading edge of careers for them to actually operate these things. So that's going to be the exciting thing to watch some of my students in a few years.
Any guesses where the technology will go from here?
Again, it's as far as our imagination can go. Right now, one of the things that's happening is the Trump accelerated, calling it the Trump accelerated program, where he came out and really quick how he came out with the program at the beginning of November, basically saying to state and local governments, you guys need to figure out how this is all going to work. And Kent State, we've applied for it. We're one of the 320 applicants, lead applicants. We're trying to right now coordinate with private industry, local governments, to come up with what this airspace is actually going to look like between 200 and 400 feet. I honestly think in about 10 years, it's going to look like the Jetsons. So those of us who remember the Jetsons, it's really going to be that exciting airspace. But how does this coordinate with our national airspace so that we don't have one of these running into an airliner with people on board? Dr. Blake Stringer and I were working on different proposals to deal with the unmanned personal aeronautical vehicle. So it'll take you places. So you can order one up like Uber for the air, and it'll take you within 25 kilometers wherever you want to go. That's one of the things we're working on now.
Very Jetsons-like.
Yes, very.
Thank you for joining us today.
No problem. Thank you.
We've been talking with Jason Lorenzon, lead faculty of the Unmanned Aerial Vehicle Program in the College of Aeronautics and Engineering at Kent State. To learn more about his work, visit our website at kent.edu/elevations. Elevations is produced by Joe Gunderman, John Nungesser, and Ellie Ellis. I'm your host, Amy Reynolds, Dean of Kent State's College of Communication and Information. Join us every Saturday morning at 7 on 89.7 WKSU.